Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Christina Forrester with Christian Democrats of America, and this is the CDA Sunday Podcast Hour. We are continuing our Christians Against Hate series this week, and I'm so excited about today's podcast because we have a very special guest, author of The Gospel of Self, How Jesus Joined the GOP, Terry Heaton. Terry was a very important figure in the rising up of the 700 Club, working directly with Pat Robertson in the 1980s, and his book is extremely informative and eye-opening on the rise of the religious right and what's happening right now with Trump and the evangelical support. You know, a lot of us have been really amazed, and we talked about this for the last year, of how much evangelical support Trump has had, and Terry's book is really eye-opening on that and on sort of the culture and the things that have led to this. So it's going to be a great conversation and really fascinating to get to talk with him. And so excited to have him today. I just want to speak one moment about CDA and our announcement this week. If you have seen our article, it's also in Huffington Post and it's on our website and Facebook everywhere. But it's about Christian Democrats getting off the Trump train and how I hope other Democrats will follow. I have a short video myself about it. And what is, because a lot of people are like, wait, you were ever on the Trump train? And my response is, yes, we have been. Democrats, progressives, we all have been for the past couple of years. And what it means is we've allowed him to dictate our reactions, to lead the narrative for far too long. And the entire 2016 elections were all about being against Trump. And we've heard so much political commentary on that in the last year. And the fact is it didn't pay off, and it's not paying off now. And, you know, a bully craves attention. And what we're doing is continuing to give him the attention. I realized it this week when Trump came to Phoenix, and that his entire purpose was to be a puppet master. And we're being the puppets when we react and we give these things attention. Now, it's very difficult because there's a fine line. As we must report the truth, we have to keep on top of what's happening, and we have to take a definite stand against hate, racism, and the direction our country is going. So we know that. That's a given. And the fact is we can do that more effectively if we keep our focus off his tweets and off the bait that he puts out there. Instead of focusing on the culture wars and the PC outrages, statues and tweets, we have to keep our eyes on doing the things and reporting on the things, talking about all the stuff Republicans have not done, and economic justice and social justice. Because the fact is Republicans and Trump, they have not helped anyone. They've not done anything. Poverty's rising, homelessness is rising, unrest and hate crimes are rising across the country. And the GOP has really shown it cannot govern effectively. And if we're going to get back in control in 2018, we have to start focusing on those things and not take the bait that Trump and the alt-right are setting out there for us. So that's just my word. And, you know, something I really felt this week, and I believe that our new magazine, which also was announced this week, it's called The Progressive Gap. It's our first ever new magazine. It's going to be really the face of the Christian resistance. And it gives us a vehicle and a platform to be able to talk about these things and to be able to talk about some of the things I'm going to explore with Terry today, which are the underlying reasons and for what we have now, and the Trump and the religious right, and what has happened in our country and what's happening now. So we're going to be able to dig into these things and get off of this constant news cycle that Trump controls. And so I'm really excited to be able to share that with you this week. We're going to have the announcement. We're going to have the first cover that you can see, as well as a new CDA website. A website upgrade is needed, and I'm so excited we're finally getting it. And we're going to have a lot of cool new features that we can share with you and help you all connect and help Christian Democrats and progressives connect better across the country. So look for those announcements this week. Keep an eye on things. Make sure that you're on our email list and watching social media so you can find out the first, as soon as things are launched. I also want to mention that if you can subscribe, or if you're a CDA member, a monthly contributor, you will get a free subscription to the Progressive Gap. And there will be more details on that sent out in our newsletter as well. And I, like I said, I can't wait to share the first cover story with you and some of the columns and contributors we have. It's really exciting. So that's all going to be within this next week. So just watch out for that. Please remember that all of our efforts are grassroots. We are not funded by any outside group, no direct affiliations with the DNC or any millionaire, hedge fund, billionaires, none of that. So we need both volunteers and contributors to keep these things going, and we appreciate anything you can do to help us keep the podcast, the Christians Against Hate group, and all of our efforts moving. And we're working and we're growing, and it's an exciting time, and it's something our country needs right now more than ever, especially after the news of the past few days. I'm excited to get into this with Terry. So like I said, Terry is the author of The Gospel of Self, How Jesus Joined the GOP. And Terry, I've been highlighting this book and I've been pouring through it and I've been making notes because there's just so much in it that has resounded with me. So welcome and thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. I'm delighted to sit here and speak with you.
Awesome. Well, before we get into the book and all the stuff I want to talk to you about, I would like to know just your reaction about this weekend and what has already happened, and the fact that, you know, we have a weather crisis on our hands, a hurricane crisis, and during that exact time, the president chooses to ban transgender people from the military and pardon Joe Arpaio, who has spent decades terrorizing Latinos in Arizona and putting forth really harsh policies that are, by most accounts, inhumane for many decades. So so we have all this, and there are still a lot of Christian people and churches who are supporting this president through everything that's happened this last couple of weeks. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, nothing that has happened or will happen surprises me. It's and that's, I think, pretty important. You just, you know, we're dealing with a guy who's, you know, not entirely there. And, you know, regardless of what he represents in the minds of normally sane people, we have an obligation, I think, to keep, resisting and keeping our minds open and trying, I think, Christina, to enter into dialogue with other Christians, because we're not going to win this argument on political grounds. And that's what's so important to me, that the, back in my days as executive producer of the 700 Club, what we did was move Christianity into the political arena. And, you know, ever since then, that's what we've been, you know, fighting. I just don't think that we're going to win the battle there. And by the way, I do think that Donald Trump is supposed to be in the White House. It's pretty hard for me to deny that, but I would, you know, where I split off from others who may be saying that is with regards to the reason that I think he's in there, which is, God's a funny fellow. He raises up people and puts them down, and, you know, all for our benefit. So I think, you know, we have a chance here right at this time and in the years to come to come against some of the divisiveness that exists in our surrounding world. And I think that would be a good thing. So, But I don't think we're going to argue. I don't think we're going to win any of these arguments on, you know, purely political grounds. I think we need to be looking for commonalities that we have with our evangelical, you know, brethren who are over there on the right. I think we need to be, you know, speaking as Christians, you know, in a culture that really is dealing with a brand of religion, you know, that, by that I mean Christianity, that has been, for the most part, hijacked by a political group. And, you know, I played a major role in making that happen. And, you know, that's why, honestly, I wrote the book. I was, funny story, I was driving home, this is in 2015, I was driving home from Birmingham and listening to sports talk radio, and there's a fellow who broadcasts here in Alabama named Paul Feinbaum. He now works for ESPN, but he's generally considered an Alabama treasure, and he has a very big audience in the South, and you know, a lot of his callers are, you know, what you would, you know, you may think of as rednecks, but you know, he has a way of handling them that's really fascinating. So anyway, I'm listening to the radio program, and this guy named Reggie, who is a regular caller, calls in and says, Paul, you ain't gonna believe what I just heard. There's this man named Donald Trump, got to be the smartest human being on the planet. He's a billionaire, Paul, and he's going to be president. And so I heard that, and of course, being in the news business all my life, I was, you know, very much aware of Donald Trump and who Donald Trump was. But it was that phone call on the Paul Feinbaum show that it was the last straw to convict me that I needed to publish this book. Because I could go on and on and on about this stuff, Christina. So, you know, but I was convicted that I needed to, you know, right what I felt was a wrong that I participated in the 1980s, as Pat Robertson's right-hand man for television.
And it really confirmed so much that we've been talking about for the last 7 years or so with Christian Democrats America, that we've been observing, and in the way that this rose up. So when I read a lot of the things in your book, I just, yeah, that's exactly what we've seen and what we suspected about how the religious right and this entire movement began. And, you know, a lot of us millennials like myself, you know, we grew up in the 80s or the 90s where it was already established. And so I've talked to people, you know, talked to my parents and things and other people who say, oh, well, in the 70s, you know, it was no big deal. You could just say, you know, oh, yeah, I'm a Christian and a Democrat, and no one thought anything about it. In fact, when I was a guest on the 700 Club on a segment, a few years ago, there was someone who actually said that to me, that you know, it shouldn't be a big deal to be a Christian, a Democrat, and it didn't used to be. And it was kind of awkward because I realized, well, you know, it's your program that kind of helped make that happen. So now it's like people in the Christian community, so many consider it an oxymoron. But that's something I want to ask you as you were talking. You know, I agree, we have to find middle ground, and let's just take abortion even, for instance. That's something I've been trying to do for about 7 years, trying to talk about, hey, we're not really that far apart on abortion. We all want to decrease the amount of abortions, and it's not like Democrats are over here saying, hey, we want to, you know, murder more babies or something like that. There's a common ground we want to reduce. And there's things we can do that promote both life and choice, that give women choice, but also protect life. So there are ways we can have a compromise if there was a willingness. But, you know, when I, just speaking on that, when I was on the 700 Club, there was this feeling almost like of shock that there were Christian Democrats represented there. And, you know, you're more experienced in this. This was the world, you know, that you started. So I'm real interested to hear, what do you think we can actually do with compromise and moderation? Because that's what I was talking about on the program. And you know what I got back from most viewers and from most people? I would say 80%, and that's been the case for 7 years with Christian Democrats of America, I'd say 80% of Christians from the other side don't want to talk, they don't want to compromise, they come on to our social media and they say, you are murderers, you are blasphemers, you are going to hell, you want to, the platform has nothing to do with Christianity. It's like they've all read the same script, and they're all coming from some script. And I've thought over the years, after reading literally thousands of these, are these people all reading one book, and then they come to us with the same with the same thing? Because it's like a record constantly, and you can't get past it, because anything you talk about and you try to talk about compromise or moderation or, no, see it from our side, that's all you get is, you're going to hell, you're murderers, there's nothing Christian about you, you can't be a Christian. That's all we hear. So how do you get past that?
Well, first of all, you have to remember that not all of the knees out there have bowed down to the false god of right-wing Republicanism. And just the fact that you mentioned the astonishment over the idea of Christian Democrats, that gives you, in my judgment, an open door. The problem is, you're going to be tagged liberal. And, you know, liberal means the same thing to these people as Satan. So, mm-hmm. you know, you have a tough road in overcoming that. But just, you know, I don't even know what liberal means anymore. And, other than it's just highly, highly pejorative attack word that, mm-hmm. you know, people on the right politically, now remember this is politically, people on the right politically use to vilify anybody who disagrees with them. So, you have to approach it from a spiritual perspective, you know. When you hear, you know, for example, Donald Trump, a lot of these evangelical Christians, they hate the man's Twitter feed. They don't like a lot of the policies that he's enacting. They don't think he's really necessarily responding to the needs that they expressed, a while ago, and that he picked up on the campaign trail. But they do believe that he's put there by God. And, they use the biblical example of King Cyrus, that God used, to free the Jews in Babylon and send them back to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem. So they see right in front of them in the Bible a story of an unrighteous king that God used for a righteous purpose, and they cling to that and cling to that and cling to that. And so if you're prepared to talk about that, you know, maybe you can do some good. But, you know, as long as you try to, you know, enter into arguments with them, you know, politically, I just don't see how you're going to break through. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book. I have I'm in Colorado Springs this weekend and have a speaking engagement with a bunch of conservatives, and it's a very intimate gathering, but it's going to be fascinating, because I'm directly speaking to the people that you would reference as the enemy, and we've got to get this enemy idea out of our heads, because we're being manipulated by forces, who are much greater than us, and who have, self-serving intentions. And, I'm so delighted to hear you say that yours is a grassroots effort, because grassroots is where it's at. I've written a lot about the horizontal church, and the horizontal church to me is where the web is going to eventually take us. The network is going to take us because we are all connected in ways we never have been before. You know, if you examine the history of the church, the church is entirely a mass marketing vehicle. Wycliffe wrote the first common English translation of the Bible, he was immediately, you know, excommunicated and made an enemy of the church. And then when the printing press came along and a Bible, for crying out loud, was actually printed, that really chafed the ruling, you know, authorities of the church. I mean, it gutted their fatted calf. And so they fought against it tooth and nail and wanted, you know, to nobody could print a Bible unless it was licensed by Rome. Well, that didn't work. Mm. And a priest at the time once said, the jewel of the elites, which I believe to be knowledge, the jewel of the elites is in the hands of the laity. And the web is really the second Gutenberg moment in history. And once again, the jewel of the elites is in the hands of the laity. And the question for us is, what are we going to do with it? So we have a way, you know, because horizontal communications are much more efficient than top-down. And yet we have all of these entities thinking that top-down is still the way to go. I mean, the church has been involved in every major mass media innovation since time began. Even, you know, satellites, two of the first 10 transponders on the original SATCOM-1 satellite were owned by Christian organizations, evangelical Christian organizations. So they saw the value of the satellite. You know, my goodness, what would be a better metaphor for preaching than from a satellite high above the world preaching down onto everybody? Well, if you look around, you'll notice that in terms of horizontal activity, the church is nowhere to be found, and that's because it doesn't fit the top down hierarchical mechanism that is the church. And you know, my goodness, what is the church going to do if people at the ground level actually get together? Oh my goodness, that's terribly disruptive. And so that's, I think, where we're at. We're just at the dawn of all of that, and we need to discuss these issues from a Christian perspective, a genuine Christian perspective, instead of a right-wing political perspective, because that's what we did at CBN. We made those issues political. We claimed we were offering a biblical perspective to the world, but really we were offering a right-wing Republican perspective to the world. And if you don't think so, then ask yourself, why would Pat Robertson run for president in 1988, for crying out loud? And all that went with that, and you know, I need to say that I, you know, there still is an enormous degree of love in my heart for Pat. I mean, when my wife died 10 years ago, he was one of the very first people to call me that morning, and to pray with me. So, I think these people are just terribly misguided. You know, and plus they've been led, you know, down the road with this whole right-wing Christianity thing. And let me say also that we set out at the 700 Club to change the world. I mean, that was our mission. That was our intent. We were not silent in any way about it. And we began with a Gallup poll about attitudes towards Christians in America. And as you can imagine, the thoughts and the words used to describe Christians by the public were almost entirely pejorative. They were, you know, it's like they were overweight, polyester wearing, Southern, ignorant, Bible thumping, you know, hicks. Just like that guy who called Paul. Just like that guy who called Paul. So we set about at the 700 Club to pitch a form of Christianity that was actually quite contrary, and we did that through marketing methodologies. We never went near anybody that fit the stereotype. We just wouldn't. And you know, cameramen in the studio were directed and trained not to show those kinds of people, you know, sitting in the audience. We were after young, upscale, you know, good-looking, prosperous, you know, people that we wanted to present the image that this was really, these were really God's people. And if you aspired to be one, you know, you could be just like them. And,
I want to pick up on that real quick, because we've heard that about, you know, certain broadcasting networks and other Christian, Christian TV shows and things. I know a lot of our viewers and our members at CDA have talked to me about this. And, you know, you'll notice and you'll hear that, they ask the most well-dressed people to come up front to be in the audience shot. And I've seen this happen before as well. And do you think that was sort of the beginning or the underpinnings of what became really the prosperity, known as the prosperity movement and the prosperity gospel and the whole gross doctrine of somehow the richer and the better you look, and the more stylish you are, the more godly you are?
Well, absolutely. And, the problem, here's what happened, though, in the 80s. While we were doing this and having great success with it, by the way, you know, in 1984 we did $248 million in tax deductible contributions. I mean, that's an extraordinary amount of money. I mean, there are days when, you know, over $1 million came in the mail.
Wow.
So we were very successful with that. The problem happened when the scandals involving the televangelists occurred, when Oral Roberts said he needed $9 million or the Lord was going to take him home, Jim Baker got into his tryst with I can't remember her name right now, but never mind, anyway, and that whole thing involving his ministry at PTL and Jerry Falwell and that scandal, and then Jimmy Swaggart and his, you know, his run-ins with prostitutes and, you know, his whole ministry coming down. CDN was never a part of any of those scandals, and yet it really badly impacted contributions. And a lot of the intelligent viewers and listeners and partners thought, you know, maybe I need to take a step away from this for a minute. And so what does that leave if those people go? That leaves the stereotype. And that's, I think, an under, you know, discussed factor in all of our efforts to contribute to the growth of the Republican Party and the moving of that political party to the right. And so yes, there is a stereotype that exists, but not all, you know. And you know, the real question to me while writing the book is always how do you convince people who are in dire straits, actually, economically, socially, how do you convince them to align with the party of the wealthy? And you know, because before the 700 Club, before, you know, the Christian right, the South was generally, you know, conservative Democrats. You know, the Blue Dog Democrats came later, but you know, there were no Republican strongholds in the South, none. They were all conservative Democrats, and so, you know, that was a major shift in the political world. And why, again, I say that you're not going to, you know, you're not going to talk to these people or argue with these people on a political level. It's just not going to happen. You know, and we haven't even begun to discuss CBN News and the creation of right-wing press, because that's a major, major part of this.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of an all-encompassing, I mean, they own, you know, Radio Wave, they own pretty much Christian media altogether. And that's why it's been one of our visions to develop our own, you know, media as a go. It's but tough when they have a string of churches all locked in. I mean, several were shocked to find out, you know, there was something like, you know, over 200 or maybe it was 2,000, I can't remember, churches that showed Mike Pence the Sunday before the election and
right.
a special address
right.
from him. And so yeah, getting back to, I mean, how do we, and you talk about, okay, so you're talking about talking with these people on a spiritual level. How, again, when we do this, and I've been on panels and I've been around and tried to, you know, find some kind of common ground and things. And it's really hard when there's, the camps are so divided, and
right.
when the conversation starts out, you are not a Christian, just a thought out judgment.
Well,
and you try to point out, well, you're judging us, you know, that's judgment, what you're doing, you can't judge me. And then it goes to, but you believe in murder, you know, so it's almost like there's no discussion, there's no compromise, that's it, you're not a Christian because you vote for Democrats and you're murdering. And that's, when I started Christian Democrats of America, that was one of the first goals, is to give people, I heard, the only voices I heard speaking for Christianity were voices talking about things that I was not even raised are
right.
Christian values, you know.
Right.
And my grandmother was an evangelist, and my dad and my mom are pastors, and, you know, I've come from a ministry family. And the things I was hearing and I've heard through the years coming from the mouths of who's supposed to represent Christianity don't even reflect Jesus at
right.
all. So
right.
that's been trying to point that out, though, the all that you have in return are just these talking points. And it's like everybody has
right.
these talking points memorized. That's, they can't get past
right.
it.
Right. Well, yeah, I think you have to take the position that that you're not a part of either side in this argument, in these political arguments. You're just not. You're not a part of the far right, and you're not a part of the far left. You know, you're Christians, and then state your positions. You know, if you wish. You know, let me tell you something that I strongly believe in regarding abortion, and I kind of have taken, you know, the position of William F. Buckley, that it's really a moral issue, and here's why. You know, abortion isn't about killing babies. It's about, and I'll use a clean term rather than the one that I would really like to use, but it's about sex. That's what it's about. Abortion is about sex. You know, it's not about killing babies, because if it was about killing babies, then the right would be very satisfied with what's happening today, because we are now, if you look at the abortion numbers, we are now below where we were when Roe v. Wade became law. So
yes.
if that's true,
in fact, under Obama, it was the lowest level that it's ever been. I just had to interject that.
Under Obama, it went
low.
Right, and why is that? That's because of very successful efforts with education and especially birth control. So, you know, and when you start to talk to certain Christians about birth control, you know, you get a, well, you know, but you can't do that. And and so, you know, that's the hypocrisy of the whole abortion argument, you know, and, you know, but it, they keep repeating the same talking points over and over and over again, because the issue isn't about abortion, it's about sex. And that's the moral dilemma that certain right-wing Christians are obsessed with sex, and you know, and just don't want to talk about it, even though that's the real issue. It's abortion as birth control. You know, I just went through a thing personally with my daughter, and just a horrible personal situation that she had to go through with a baby who was diagnosed with severe genetic problems, and at 20 weeks. And so, you know, she,
oh dear,
you know, bless her heart, she stuck with it, you know, and I was really proud of her for that. But there came a point in the third trimester where the body said no, and naturally started separating the placenta from, you know, the baby, because the body knew that there was something wrong. And so, you know, what is an abortion in the third trimester? It's called a C-section, you know, and, you know, so she had a C-section. The baby lived for 6 hours, and but it, you know, I couldn't. I honestly hate to say this, but it was very hard to even look at that baby. And so I have personal, up close and personal experience with that whole business. And you know, the problem is the right doesn't want to talk about that kind of thing. You know, they want to talk about, you know, the mere suggestion that a perfect baby, you know, could even be aborted in the ninth month is absurd. It's just absurd, and yet that talking point exists out there. So abortion to me, Christina, is, in fact, the issue is not abortion, it's sex. And, you know, just like the whole transsexual or homosexual thing, it's not about, you know, violation of covenants. It's about sex. And, you know, we're just way behind where we should be in our willingness to discuss those kinds of things.
You're the first person I've heard say that. It's very interesting.
Well, you know, that's the truth, and so, you know, do I think that abortion is wrong? Of course. I mean, my daughter wouldn't do an abortion at 20 weeks, and I understood that. I understood her desire, and I've known so many people who've had abortions and, you know, have different thoughts as the years have gone by about it. So morally, the judgment is very easy for me. However, it's not a legal issue. The moment you try to inject the law into it, one way or the other, you've got problems. You know, it's a decision, frankly, that belongs with a mother and her doctor and her family, and that's fine with me. It's a talking point that is used, you know, by other people to beat you up with, because you might be, oh my God, a liberal, you know, and so I think you need to stay away from both extremes, you know, and just say, look, we're just Christians, and I want to, you know, I really want to take this some time to encourage you too, because there's more going on in the world than you realize. I was at a conference in January, and I heard numbers from that Southern Baptists are losing, by the time they're losing 80% of the membership that reaches the age of 18. That's an astonishing and shocking number. But it meshes with the things that I see. There is an enormous thirst for something meaningful that's out there right now. There are a lot of very good people who are trying to tap it, you know, and of course the right would think that, well, that means that there's a big revival coming. Well, it may indeed be a big revival, but it's not going to be of your ilk, because people are fed
right.
up with it, you know, of the hypocrisy
yeah.
of the whole thing. And so if you follow people the guy I just love is David Hayward, the naked pastor. He's a cartoonist and you know, an artist, but he also runs a website for people who have left the church. And you know, I think you know when you start asking questions about people who've left the church, you know, you will get an earful about stuff that you have hoped you would hear but haven't heard. And there mm-hmm. are a lot of those people. They're looking for something, and the smart person is going to come along and offer it, and you know, and be, I think, very successful in, and it will probably be in some sort of horizontal connectivity thing. So you know, because you just can't help when you get into hierarchies, you just, the temptation for, you know, mischief is just too great. You know, and we as human beings, you know, we can't avoid it. So, you know,
well, it seems one thing one thing that you said just reminded me of something you said in your book about how right now, you know, the people in, you know, supporting Trump and the GOP for a long time now are not even voting in their best interest. And that's something we've tried to point out a lot
right.
at CDA, is how, you know, you have people here in the South and the people who have been Trump supporters and GOP supporters. And, you know, I've seen this even in, you know, distant family and friends of my own, where they're people who really need the services and use the services that Democrats support and the things that Democrats want to do to lift up people in poverty and provide the social safety net and help decrease homelessness and all of these things that, you know, a lot of these people really are for. They want that, but yet they continue to vote out of their best interest. And it's as if, you know, there's some kind of spiritual duty in it. And you talk about that in your book. And you also mentioned that as like the angry mob. And I'm wondering, is that mob like what we see at Trump rallies? And also, where is, why do people continue to believe the propaganda? Because I've seen the stories and, you know, talking about abortion going, you know, all across the board, we just see this propaganda. And it paints
right.
women who, like your daughter, you know, who have had medical issues. And, you know, I think it's something like 90% of abortions that are of a later trimester or more, maybe it's 99%, they're mostly all medically related of some kind. And,
right.
and we have to have compassion for that. And I can't believe that these people don't have compassion if it's a family member, but yet they see this propaganda that, oh, Democrats want abortions for all. And somehow what, we just want to kill babies for the fun of it? I mean, that's almost what is portrayed. So how do we get them to not see this propaganda for what it is? And it, like you said, this angry mob that develops.
Well, I think, you know, again, I want to encourage you, because Democrat isn't the pejorative word. Liberal, pejorative word. You know, liberals are the ones who have taken from the working class and, you know, given it to the poor people. You know, liberals are the ones who, you know, who want to continue to take. And so that's, you know, what you're dealing with in terms of propaganda. I strongly agree with your use of that word. And, you know, and I've, I've studied a lot of that in my life because I'm interested in it. You know, what we did was create, in CBN News, we created a political propaganda machine. And that's, you know, plain and simple. That's what it was. We wrote the playbook that Fox copied, you know.
Right.
And it was because if you can present political propaganda as news, then, you know, you accomplish a great many things, including forcing the news that is not, you know, political propaganda into a defensive posture. And they've been very successful with that. And it's easy. It's very easy to do. I think what Democrats need to do is to get back to, geez, I've just written a new piece for the Huffington Post that will be published next week, and I'll talk about my father. My dad was a staunch labor guy. He grew up in the furniture factories of Western Michigan, and he hated Republicans. Why? Because they were the party of the rich, the silk stockings, the guys who, you know, lorded it over, you know, the working class. And I think the Democrats have lost that, you know, have lost that weapon, that this is the party of the wealthy. And what have they to do with you? You know, that's a fair discussion. And so hopefully, the Democrats will, you know, take up a different, you know, reject the label liberals, you know. It's made up anyway. It's an artificial, you know, pejorative term that is equated with the devil. And of course, you're not going to win an argument being positioned as the devil. You're just not going to, you know. So, you know, it's like you need to come up with five or six talking points that assign, you know, to the Republican Party the traditional label of being the party of the rich. And ask those people out in the, you know, middle America states, you know, who have fallen for, you know, the flim-flam or flim-flammery of I'm going to return manufacturing jobs to you and everything's going to be fine because we're going to make America great again. What a bunch of bullshit that is. And excuse my French, but where in that whole conversation is automation being discussed? You know, because automation is a much greater threat to people with manufacturing backgrounds than are, you know, Democrats. So it's like if the Democrats need to be the party of, you know, retraining and being on the front end of holograms and automation and all of the, you know, new technological future. And, just simply don't, what we need to do, Christina, is we need to stop reacting. You know, we're in a defensive position. You know, we're the batter at the plate who's expecting to get hit by the pitch. You know, we can't possibly swing for the fences because we think we're going to get hit. That's not helping.
That's such a confirmation of the direction even this week that I was really led to after Trump, and I said at the top of the podcast here, and there's an article on our website now and an article I have on Huffington Post on this saying it's time for Democrats to get off the Trump train because that's where we've been. And we've been reacting to him. We've been allowing him to dictate our reactions. And it's just like a bully. And my mom taught me when I was a kid, don't give control to the bullies. Don't let them have power over you and keep reacting to them. So if you stop that, then you take their power away. And I think that's where the left is at. It's hard to not react when the bait is out there and it's so outrageous, and there's so much.
Yeah, I know.
I'm as guilty as anybody, you know, of reacting.
But
to win to win elections, yeah, but like you said, we have to focus on the economic message and the truth about what Republicans are not doing and what Trump is not doing and what we can do to help people.
Yep, and, you know, to all the people who have it made, you know, that's, you know, there's always self-interest in politics. And, if you have a lot of money and you want more, you know, more power to you, but that's not, you know, that's not the message that you find in the red words of the Bible. And,
right.
You know, I wrote a piece last autumn after, I mean, I got both the party platforms side by side and studied them. And, you know, you would be hard pressed, I think, honestly, hard pressed for Christians who really have any sense of compassion in their bones or any sense of the teachings of our Lord, you would be hard pressed for them to not find those words in the party platform of the Democrats. And yet they are nowhere near the party platform of the Republicans. It was just night and day.
Exactly.
And so,
exactly.
You know, but all of that is lost in this propaganda machine. And,
yes.
You know, let's face it, Donald Trump is naturally gifted at logical fallacies. And so, you know, and every time that gets thrown out there, we feel an obligation to refute it. And we're done at that point. We're just done. We are, as you say, riding the Trump train. And, you know, I have come to believe in my life, Christina, that human beings are responsible for their actions. But we are also responsible for our reactions. And that's where we get fooled. That's where we get fooled the most. And so, you know, I don't want to say that the Sheriff Joe is irrelevant, but to a certain extent, he is. You know, we are not going to win anybody's or change anybody's mind by arguing against a guy like that and against Trump or, you know, pardoning him. And excuse me, we got a much bigger battle to fight. It's kind of like, you know, Game of Thrones. We've got this, you know, this big coming war that we see, you know, but, you know, others don't because they're interested in ruling the land. But, you know, we say, no, this whole death thing is coming, you know, and death is the enemy. And so, you know, let's fight it and let's be Christians. There's nothing wrong with it. You know, there's nothing wrong with being a Christian and calling yourself somebody who's interested in the poor and the afflicted. You know, and that's just the truth. You know, that's why I call it the gospel of self. When, you know, we taught the gospel of self-help manual. You know, that's what we've done. It's,
Terry, we got a technical, we can't.
You know, based upon certain teachings of out of
can't hear you very well, Terry. Sorry.
And so I think we have a generation now that has been, you know, bred and raised on the gospel of self, and that if God is judging the world, he is, in any way, shape, or form, he is judging the church first. And, you know, I think, you know, we tend to, you know, I would say right-wing Christians tend to view, you know, God's activity in the world today as judging the United States, you know, for its sin. But, I don't see that as the case. God is judging the church, and, you know, you had better be prepared, you know, dear church, for that judgment. And I think there's a message there, a Christian message there, that can resonate too. You know, what these right-wing propaganda, political propaganda people don't want is a discussion
Yeah, and that's probably why we've been fought so much when we do put up. You know, it's amazing to me that, you know, we'll put up a scripture and it'll get, you know, 300-400 shares, and that scripture then will actually get people who are saying that they're Christians and arguing with us just over the scripture we posted. It's as if with some circles, and that's not with everybody, of course, but with some circles, it's as if the Word of God itself is, they don't want to see it. And it's because so many of these in control, like you're talking about, have used just these few cherry-picked verses and focused on just that. And that's all that they know and that they hear. So it is, it is so important. That's why I'm so excited that we're getting, you know, this magazine and things started. And that was the vision for that, is that we can start focusing on some of these broader topics and get off of the Trump train and focus on what we need to and talk about these things.
Right, because I encourage you. I'm really happy that you're doing what you're doing. This is a very important thing that you're doing, and how do you avoid, being on the defensive? Well, the way you do that is by playing offense. You need to have a strategy, and you need to just go for it. And I think that you're on the cusp of something that's very important. And you and your followers and your supporters, you know, need to be encouraged. And I applaud you because it's not the easier, softer way. You know, life is hard, but it's hard for everybody. And it's not just, you know, there's no room in life really for self-pity. And that's what, you know, that's what this whole movement of the Christian right, if you will, of the evangelical Christian right, has prompted. It's like, it's okay for you to feel sorry for yourself, because look what these people have done to you. You know, they've taken away, you know, your job. They've taken away, you know, your tax money. They've, you know, you deserve better, you know. And, you know, boy, I hate that word deserve, because it's just loaded with the potential, you know, negativity and mischief. So, I don't deserve anything, you know, and I'm very happy with that. And, there's so much more that we could talk about. You've got to be running out of time, right?
We're about at 2 minutes. Yeah. So, I mean, I just want to thank you so much. Thank you so much for the encouragement, for your wisdom and sharing your experiences with us and with the world. And I just want to tell all of our members, you know, please get this book. Like, it's something that we all need to read, that you need to see, and I think it's really important. It's you did this at the right time, Terry. I'm so glad that you did and that you're telling your story. It's really the right time. So please pick up a copy of the book. We'll have a link to the book directly on our website. And Terry, I hope you'll come back and do another podcast, do an interview, anything with us at any time. We would love to have you back and talk to you more. There's so much more to talk about. I feel like we just barely scratched the surface here.
I'm writing weekly for the Huffington Post, so that's another place that
Wonderful.
You can find
Great.
My commentary.
Great. Well, we'll have a link. We'll post a link to that as well, and post some of those, absolutely, and share some of that on our social media. So thank you, and I just want to tell everyone, thank you for listening. Watch for announcements. Please take a look at our website this week. Watch for announcements on the Progressive Gap, and consider joining the movement. We are we're moving forward, and this is an important time right now. I just want to leave you with a scripture. It's Sunday, so let's end on a scripture. Luke 6:45, the good man brings good things out of the good treasure of his heart, and the evil man brings evil things out of the evil treasure of his heart. For out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. So, amen. Thank you guys so much. God bless.